Good morning. Today is Wednesday, the 29th of December, last Wednesday of the year.
Yes, it is.
And you're in the booth. What the heck is going on?
I know. It's the world has gone crazy.
Yeah. But we have Christmas lights behind you, so we're okay.
Thank you.
Maggie Fleming is here, and she brought along a buddy.
Yes, I did.
What's this about?
This is my friend Anne-Marie Schubert. She's the district attorney in Sacramento County, and she's running for state attorney general.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
Boy,
it.
Boy, is this a... everybody else step back?
We hope so.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about what that job does. Notice we got, since you've been here,
a new one.
We've got a new book, and Winston, you want to show Maggie the duck? So we got rid of the Nerf ball.
Oh, that's nice.
After 10 years. I don't know. Did you share any of this?
I did.
Behind the scenes
when,
stuff?
I don't know if I want
to
know.
When it's time to go to break, he throws a Nerf ball at you, and that gives you the heads up that
it's coming.
Yeah, a 30-second warning. It worked so much better than the whistle. You know, it just didn't play well. All right, flip side. Why do we say the flip side of something?
And this is where we're supposed to come up with an answer.
Yeah, yeah. It starts here and works down.
Both points of view.
Yeah. So maybe it's in olden days they had to flip over the mattress. I don't know.
You're going back to pioneer days, huh? Jeez.
What do you think, Winston? Am I close? No, I didn't.
Okay, we're starting with Chinese to give you a clue. Chinese think and speak of the working of the opposite cosmic forces in terms of yin and yang. Mm. Americans, more versed in technology than philosophy, say that every argument and each set of principles has a flip side. Though the expression is too firmly entrenched in speech to face an early demise, the technology that produced it is virtually obsolete. Tape cassettes wreaked havoc in the phonographic record industry. Compact discs have sounded its death knell, and obviously now with the digital. But in its heyday, the revolving platter ruled popular music in the Western world. This was even radio when you missed it.
Sorry, Brian.
Okay, it was music radio, not talk radio. So, okay, we're halfway back. Practically every song that went through the top charts was accompanied by another song that didn't rival it in popularity. Cut into the reverse face of the record, this musical hitchhiker was noticeably different from its companion, which meant that practically every record had
a flip side.
A second recording that gave listeners quite a different impression from those produced by the first.
I didn't even think of that.
Well, obviously.
It's still early in the morning.
Pioneer days.
So she didn't warn you at all about this program, huh?
I forgot this part. I'm sorry.
Okay. So state office is something that's a little either awe-inspiring or head-scratching. Which one is it for you?
Well, I'd like to think it's awe-inspiring. It's, you know, it's exciting. I'm like Maggie. I've been in this field my whole professional life. I love what I do. I've been a prosecutor for almost 32 years now, and I feel very strongly that the state needs some balance and needs somebody that actually has understood the job and kind of grown up in the system, believes in accountability and rehabilitation and that kind of balance. So
wait a minute, you said accountability?
Yeah.
In the state of California, legal accountability. That's right up there with responsibility.
Should be. We kind of lost our way in a lot of things.
I think so. Maggie, we've had conversations, obviously, about the lack thereof.
Right.
When you look from the county level up to the state, is that a long stretch or is it a partnership?
It's a partnership. And it could be a really good partnership if we had, you know, much better representation at the state level, sort of addressing the big issues that we see. I think too often people forget what the criminal justice system really is about and what it's trying to address. And we really do have to think in terms of how are we going to fix this? How are we going to improve the way we're handling those who are our chronic problems? And I know, Brian, you and I talked about one time the lawsuit that was being brought against the California Department of Corrections with how they were providing credits. And
right.
Anne-Marie has some good news about that.
Well, as you probably know, a number of DAs across California sued Department of Corrections over it, really because they didn't follow what we call a public notice process, letting the public have input. They just recently added more regulations without that public notice to increase credits to upwards of 66%, for meaning that you'd only serve about a third.
So if somebody was sentenced to 30 years, 10?
Depending on the type of individual.
If they qualify.
But it could be someone with a horrific record of domestic violence. That's the particular crime that is probably one of the most egregious. It's not just domestic violence, because under the law, that's considered, quote, nonviolent, which I think is
crazy.
Ridiculous.
Really?
But yeah. It's nonviolent.
Is that the courts making that determination?
No, that's the law. And we've tried to change it for years to recognize that there's certain crimes that really are violent, but under the law, they're not. Rape of an unconscious person, assault with a deadly weapon, things that by in and of itself, that's why many of us, you know, myself included, opposed Prop 57, because it billed itself as early release for, quote, nonviolent felons. So
does this go back to when women were chattel?
I don't know how long the history of the penal code, I mean, really for 15 years, we've tried, you know, many people have tried to change it so that we were inclusive, and it's always been fought off. And
by who?
The legislature. I mean, mm-hmm. It goes back to this concept that we don't want accountability and we don't want to, quote, put more people in prison, which they already are. But go back to this lawsuit. The lawsuit's pending, but then they just tried to institute more regulations, and we have sought a restraining order against that. So we anticipate a ruling today. We're very hopeful that corrections will not be allowed to do this until we go through this process that we've been consistently asking for. And many folks don't understand that Prop 57, when it was passed, gave corrections extraordinary amount of power to give credits to people. And we just
And by corrections... You're talking about the jailers?
The state prison system, the California Department of Corrections. And so it's very concerning that, you know, we want the public to have input, because many of us have felt for years that crime victims have been ignored and really abandoned.
So this is kind of circumventing the judicial system and the legal system with the corrections folks. Okay.
Yes.
You know, if we had a camera in here, it would have been a nice shot for both of you. KINS, News and Information Time.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Anne-Marie Schubert and Maggie Fleming. Maggie, what got you into the legal arena? Was there an event, a reason, a calling?
I think it's a sort of a compilation of a number of events. And my dad was... he was a laborer. He worked two jobs to support the family, and then ultimately he got into a union and he became a business agent. And so at night at the dinner table, he was always talking about what you had to do, to sort of understand the rules and to advocate. And it became really the most fascinating part, I think, of the dinner table conversations, in part because nobody was yelling when that was taking place. And I really appreciate it. And from the time I was little, he used to say to me, this is what you should do. You should be a prosecutor. And it's funny how you really can have that affect how you sort of start seeing yourself. And then I just sort of started taking that path from that point on. And really, to my parents, they were the children of immigrants. And they were always concerned that perhaps there were issues where people were treated unfairly. And if you went into prosecution, maybe you could help address that.
Change the world.
And that was part of the message that I got early on and throughout my life.
So you liked debate class then?
We didn't really have that.
Yeah.
And I don't, I got asked that one time, were you ever in debate? I said, you know, I never ever had that class. We never ever had that experience, but it.
Perhaps it was at the dinner table, huh?
Yeah, well, that's true. People were shouting, so, you know.
How about you, Anne-Marie?
I say this and I'm honest. I kind of went to law school for the wrong reasons. I went because I felt like, okay, there's a couple paths in life and I could get a decent job when I was done. And halfway through, I went to school in San Francisco. Halfway through that, I interned for a judge in San Francisco. Her name was Lucy McCabe. She was a hoot. And then I interned for the DA's office and I fell in love with public safety. And I never looked back. I found like I really felt that I found my calling. And I actually, Maggie and I started at the same office. Many of your listeners probably remember McGregor Scott, his family from this county. And Greg Scott and I were in the same class together and have been friends ever since. So it's been a great ride.
Even a small world in the legal world, even in California.
Oh, yes, well, for sure. Definitely. I still remember when I first started here, I was walking down the hall and I didn't know who Jerry Scott was yet. And this booming voice said, "Are you the new prosecutor?" And I stopped and I thought, wow, I didn't expect this to happen. And I turned around and then he said, "I'm McGregor's dad." And it was so great. And from then on, we would always, you know, when I'd see him in the hall, we'd always talk. And I still miss Jerry so much.
You'd yell at him, "Are you the old lawyer?"
Yeah. But it is. It's funny how it particularly, I think, within prosecutors, it is a, you know, it's kind of a small world. We tend to all know each other. And over the years, you know, like we started together, McGregor went in, you know, became the USAG. I mean, when I think about all the DAs that I know from Contra Costa who have gone on to other counties, but it's so nice because every time you have an issue, you have a lot of people that you can reach out to and say, "This has come up. How is your county addressing mm-hmm. this?" And I know recently with the, you know, the fentanyl homicide case we had, I reached out to Anne-Marie, you know, and talked about it because she was one of the people that first sort of discussed this at our statewide conference about, you know, the issues that we're seeing with this
how bad
explosion
it is.
Of fentanyl deaths, and what are we going to do about it?
Do either of you grasp the why?
Why of the fentanyl?
Why would anybody consider taking it?
Because of the high.
Yeah.
Because it's so much more, it's like a 50 times more powerful than an oxy type of pill.
But if everybody's going horizontal.
Well, they're not thinking straight in the first place. I mean, that's one thing I always, you know.
You don't start with this stuff?
I haven't started with it myself, so I'm not, it can kill with one pill. And unfortunately, I've sat with many families whose, you know, loved ones, their children, their high school kid, they find their high school son deceased in bed, and he took a half a Percocet pill because he thought he had some, you know, knee problems or whatever. And it's very, very concerning. In San Francisco, two people are dying a day of this. A day. 700-plus people have died in the city of San Francisco from fentanyl in the last year.
Are there any communities that are wrestling with this successfully? Or is it still on the uptick?
I think it's still an emerging issue where I think we're doing our very best. I don't believe we're going to prosecute our way out of this problem. Yes, there'll be some people that, you know, they know that fentanyl is dangerous and they're still selling it and somebody dies, they'll be prosecuted. But what we're trying as really all of us in the prosecution side are trying to educate folks mm-hmm. and get out there and do public awareness campaigns. Give out Narcan. It's one thing we've done in our county is because that's really the only way to save people in a moment. But it's a really an awareness campaign that people are like, it's too late once they're deceased.
Yeah. So all of law enforcement in Humboldt County carries Narcan. I mean, everybody's really trying, you know, to save the lives that we are sadly seeing.
Well, somebody said one of the cops was doing something. And got
a blast
in the face and went down and came back with it.
Yeah.
They
were really limited in whether or not they were going to be able to do testing of it because it is so potent. They, you know, obviously are very concerned about being exposed to it.
Yeah. And then the fire guys and the ambulance mm-hmm. riders mm-hmm. and paramedics and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not good stuff by anybody's stretch of the imagination. I guess we just lead into the next segment. I'm even going to give you a chance to think. biggest legal issue in the state of California when we come back. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Anne-Marie Schubert and Maggie Fleming. What is the number one issue facing the state of California from both of your perspectives?
I think you're going to get the same answer.
Right. Would want me to start?
Yeah.
I think it's...
They did not talk about this during the break.
I think it's the demise of and the watering down of accountability within our legislature. The superhighway of legislation is overwhelming. I mean, we have a professional association that helps us track bills, and because I'm in Sacramento, we're very engaged in legislative stuff. It is unbelievable to see what's been happening in our legislature, and many of the public don't understand it, or actually don't know, not that they don't understand. They don't know because they're just living their lives, and then all of a sudden these bills come through, and we're like, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's really shocking to see. I mean, I gave you an example kind of offline about ways that people get out of prison early now. And you'd be shocked to see how different. It's like you need a flow chart, okay? But one of the ones that is an example is what we call elderly parole. So if, let's say Maggie convicts somebody of a horrific child molest and the judge says you're going to get 120 years in prison. Well, once that, under the old laws, once you get to 60 and you've served 25 years, you can apply for elderly parole. Okay, we may disagree with that because a judge has sentenced this person, but now the law has been changed to you're 50. You're considered elderly at 50. Now, I'm personally offended because I'm over 50, but I also look at it like, well, we can't collect Social Security and we can't get a pension, but we can get out of prison at the age of 50 after only 20 years. You qualify for AARP as well. So it's very concerning, and I think the biggest thing for many of us on the prosecution side is we've lost the victims' voices in all of this, and they're actually in many ways they don't want to be heard in our legislature. We'll bring them and ask them to speak to the legislature if they're willing, but they're given 2 minutes to say what happened to their family, and so it's very concerning.
Maggie, how about for you?
I agree. And you know what's sad about it is the changes that are made affect everybody's lives without their input. And then we are left, those of us at the local level, picking up the pieces. So, you know, we'll have a victim, we'll go through the process, we'll say, oh, okay, you know, he's going to plead guilty, he's going to get 18 years, here are the terms and conditions, he's going to do it at 85%. And then they'll find out that this person's commit for early release. And we get those phone calls where people are just outraged that, how did this happen? And we see it time and again, and it's really frightening, but it also means they did not have to go through the process of actually taking the time to be rehabilitated. They didn't have to take the classes that, you know, the programs that they normally would have to go through in order to see it. And of course, Brian, we know, and I'm sure it's the same for Emory and Sacramento, we also see it at lower levels. We watch continuously, you know, the thieves that go in and nothing is happening. And again, it's the changes in the laws that has just so profoundly affected communities and people's ability to feel safe in their day-to-day life.
So do you both deflect those calls to the local state electeds offices, let them field it and feel the heat of or the reaction and the response of their action?
I mean,
accountability is the issue, those are the folks that are doing it, and if you're taking the heat or the arrow, and they don't even, you know, see the blood on the floor, That doesn't make a lot of sense either.
Well, but it really is our offices that, because we all have victim witness programs where we deal with families.
And, well, sure, and that's where and the connection is.
That's the connection. Yeah. So we will explain, you know, I'm sorry, but this is the reason. But we also have an obligation to walk those folks through this process. And it's,
sure.
Honestly, it's devastating. If anybody's watching what's going on in Los Angeles and San Francisco, what's happening there is being mirrored in our legislature. And that's where it's kind of, it's the dismantling of the system really from their actual district attorney from within. And crime victims and the public are in uproar.
What are those DAs like? I mean, not to bag on peers, but I'm sure you guys do around the bar anyway.
Well, they really have no business being DAs.
Are they cut of the same fabric?
Oh,
or 100% totally different?
Not.
They're more politicians. They're more in the business for a different reason. And it's demoralizing to watch, and it's demoralizing for the people who work in those offices who are trying to make a difference for their communities to just be undercut in that way.
They just have the funding to be able to
enormous amount of funding put
share
it in.
Their whatever the perspectives are that get them elected and then reelected.
They haven't been reelected yet. They were.
Oh, they're all first termers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the one in L.A., you know, Maggie and I were very good friends with the former DA of L.A. was an incredible woman named Jackie Lacey, African American, moderate, really probably more progressive Democrat, leading an office of the biggest law firm in the U.S. Incredible DA, and she got taken out by about $12 million put into the other person, a guy named George Gascon. And similar to San Francisco, the guy that's the quote DA now is a public defender, and so they both are facing recalls. But what I think is important,
so the community does see some connectivity to who their DA is and what's going on out on the street.
Right, right. But it is important that people understand that what's happening there is being mirrored in our legislature. Many of the bills that we're seeing in the legislature are things that they've just decided, even though they're the executive branch, not the legislative, to just implement themselves and say, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to follow this law. I'm not going to do this.
Oh, they're being selective?
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes. They're being sued. I mean, the LADA had to be sued by his own prosecutor's union to do his job. And actually file charges in a way that the law mandates. And so it's...
Is this all, like, below the surface, or is it just not being...
It makes the LA
attention?
Newspapers. I mean, when someone says, we will not charge any enhancements, that's guns. That's, you know, there are so many... That's gang enhancements. It's everything. And to have sort of that rule from the DA is just... It's unbelievable.
Yeah, the governor came out of San Francisco. You would think that there would be some, at least, friendships, relationships between he and the folks that he worked with before. Permission granted to keep doing this? I mean, it just seems unconscionable.
Well, I definitely think that the public is waking up to a lot, especially what's happening. I mean, a recall on the DA in San Francisco and L.A., that's a very big deal, and it's not an inexpensive effort. So what's happening there with the massive drug addiction, the massive mental health issue, and this rampant crime, people are realizing their quality of life is being destroyed.
Just for those keeping track at home, those were the two things I wrote down, drugs or mental health. And I didn't know which of those two I would have put number one. But since you're talking about the legislature, I'd say mental health. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with four airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on AHA, American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Reno, and Las Vegas. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Anne-Marie Schubert and Maggie Fleming, DAs. What's it like to be a DA? I mean, is it as an elected position, it's got to be kind of cool because you know at least a percentage of the people turning out to elect said, yeah, okay. And then the re-election, it's like, whoa, I guess I'm doing okay. Is it more administrative or is it more legal?
I think it's both. I think it's, you know, I'm from a big county, so we have a, you know, pretty large office, million.
Yeah, I heard Sacramento's kind of big.
It's big. it has its challenges like any place else, but I think what I like, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of administrative, but it's also policy. So for me, I mean, I loved being in a courtroom and I love doing trials. I don't do that anymore, but I like to think I'm an advocate outside of courtrooms, whether it's on the legislative front, whether it's on policy. That stuff I really enjoy because I think it's important that, you know, people making decisions understand our perspective.
Do you get to hire your people?
Yeah, we hire our people.
Okay, so at least you have that influence where you can get a team of tigers together.
We do get to hire. It's we do a lot of work to make sure that we reach all different segments of society so that we can really diversify our workforce and bring in lots of good folks.
Diversify, you know, that's a code word.
Oh, I don't know what that's
a variety of people?
Well, we have a big office. We're 500 people. Yeah. We have 500 employees. We have a crime lab. So we have all different kinds of professions. We have criminalists and we have investigators. We have social workers that help victims. We have lawyers and support staff. So.
And Guido?
What's that mean?
The enforcer.
Oh.
Maggie knew what it meant.
Maggie's the enforcer.
How about for little old Humboldt County?
You know, I think it's very similar in that it's a lot more administration, but it is also a lot of the legal input. I, like Anne-Marie, I loved being in a courtroom. I love trying cases. I don't do that as the DA, but it means that I'm there all every day to help people who are in the courtroom, who come in with questions or issues or concerns, and we walk through it. And I know I've said before, I review a very large percentage of the felonies that come into the office and all of the homicides. I review a lot of search warrants. So I'm still very, very involved in the day-to-day legal operations. And then also, as Anne-Marie said, trying to be a good advocate for what we need to see as we move forward to try to address the problems that we have in the community.
Both of you are fans of Disney, I'm presuming. Disneyland? As moms? Okay. So if I would say pixie dust, okay. I mean not any goofy that might be referenced on the street. If you had if you had pixie dust and could change one thing,
oh goodness,
what would it be?
It's a big one.
You go first on that one.
You know what? Yeah. I'm torn between so many of the issues. I think homelessness really affects our community. But then so does the mental illness that we see and obviously the addiction issues. So it would be those three, if I could have three.
You're going to fertilize the field.
I need a lot more pixie dust than you were going
to give me, Ron. I think she's right. I mean, as I travel the state and talk to folks, crime's a big issue, that's for sure. But people are very, very concerned about people that are mentally ill, drug addicted, and living in on the streets, and we need to do something as a society to help fix that problem because it's not helping them. We have people dying. I mean, like I said, 700 people in San Francisco have died last year, and it's not compassionate to let folks remain in that state.
What kind of impressions do you have about these gangs, cars, whatever, the convoys that pull up in these stores? You mentioned San Francisco and Sacramento, and you know, duh. And they break into the and just take stuff. No accountability, no nothing. Is trend or an outlier?
I think it's just another example of how we've emboldened people that they understand that, you know, there's very little consequences for these kinds of behaviors. There was an incident in Arwell County in Walnut Creek. It was like 80 people right. Showed up at the Nordstrom, and I think they caught two or three of them, and they all got out of jail. And so there's very little... you know, if you don't have enforcement,
I believe the word was accountability.
Yes.
Full circle. We're done. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you for having us.
See everybody tomorrow.